Welcome back. Very honored to be joined now by our Congressman, Dana Rohrabacher. Dana, welcome back to Straight Talk.
Thank you very much, Art.
You know, Dana, we start each show with a one-minute tribute to police, fire, and military, people who risk their lives every day for total strangers. And watching the State of the Union speech recently was so moving, and it just reinforced our feeling here of honoring our military and our police and fire.
I think that we have times like these, we have to keep that in the back of our mind. We have to be grateful that it's like the air. You take air for granted, but somebody takes away your air for about 30 seconds, you realize how important it is. And we just can't take for granted the fact that there are people paying the price for the enjoyment and the good lives that we have right now.
And we have to be grateful to them, and we honor them, and be you Republican or Democrat, we're all Americans, and we salute them. I thought, just one man's opinion, it was one of the great State of the Union speeches, the delivery, the emotion, and the content.
I'd give it an A++, and I was there. Of course, I was one of the ones who organized this effort to put a little
little
ink on your finger and then hold it up in solidarity with the people of Iraq. And
that was so moving.
I've worked on presidential speeches before. I was a speechwriter for President Reagan, and I would give this an A++. And I think the president himself, over the years, has grown with this job in terms of his ability to communicate.
Our guest last week was former presidential speechwriter Craig Smith, who wrote for President Ford, also worked for President Bush Sr. as a consultant. And I spoke to him after the speech, and he also gave it an A+. Thought it was a great speech. Well, a lot of challenges in Washington. Needless to say, the Middle East and Iraq are on the top of the list, but what do you see the next year bringing as far as our foreign policy goes?
Well, we have tremendous opportunities, and when you make a stand, as the president did, and you stick to it, as the president did, and it proves to be successful, as it seems to be, that opens up great opportunities in other areas, because people then see the reality. You know, we're not stuck with the reality that we've got. I mean, here's a president who's changed the reality in Iraq. And when everybody else was pulling on him, begging him to postpone the elections and things, he stuck to it. The people backed him up. And now they're throughout the Middle East, they know, hey, he's for real, but there's a chance now. You know, people who live under this the Saudi royal family, for example. I mean, you have a corrupt royal family there who's been squandering the resources of that country. There are, I'm sure, many young people who don't want radical Islam, but don't want to live in that same corrupt society.
And now, he mentioned Saudi Arabia, and he mentioned Egypt in the speech.
We need some reform, democratic reform throughout the Middle East and in many of these countries. Iraq was the best place to start because it got rid of one of our enemies, the guy who hated us, Saddam Hussein. And so this is an exciting moment.
So you're cautiously optimistic that this strategy is going to work?
Well, I always have been. I was the point man for the president in defending his policy in the media for these last 2 years. But I believed in what his goal was, and I think that we've got a great opportunity now to, as I say, make a better tomorrow for the world.
And the Palestinian-Israeli conflict looks like there's a thaw and an opening now that never quite existed before.
I will tell you that if we would have failed in Iraq, we'd have gone in there and run away like a dog with its tail between its legs, I should say, that wouldn't be an opportunity. But now we've gained the respect of a lot of different people. And we can use that to maybe bring peace between the Palestinians and the Israelis in a number of things, like in Egypt, where they really need political reform in Egypt, because the Mubarak, I mean, he may be not a warmonger for the Israelis, but there's not truly a democratic regime. They need to have more democracy there.
Finally, Iran, which is one of the president's axes of evil countries, and the danger of Iraq getting the bomb. What to do about that?
The more successful we are in Iraq, the more the mullahs will feel the pressure in Iran. we may not even need to have outside military force applied to prevent them from building that atomic bomb. Maybe what we need to do is support the pro-democratic movement in Iran, which now is being strengthened by the fact that right next door, they've got a new democracy in Iraq.
Do you think a lot of Iranians are kind of fed up with the mullahs at this point?
If you can imagine living under some radical kook, even if in our society, if it's a Christian fundamentalist who said, God's telling me what to do, and you can't have a say, and you got to do what I say, then you find out they're corrupt, they're incompetent, they're hypocrites. That's true of all of these mullahs, and just as it's true sometime of our fundamentalists or other type of religious.
And I just point out for the record that a fundamentalist right-wing Israeli citizen assassinated the prime minister of Israel. So
that's right.
In every faith, in every country, there that's are right. extremists.
What we need to stress is that freedom of religion is what it's all about. And I of course am very supportive of the Christians in this country who believe that some of their some people are attacking their rights of expression, and but no one that I know wants to have other people forced to pray or other people being forced to do because of what their religion says, and in those countries where they have that, like in Iran, their people are seething because they see the hypocrisy of it. We need to make work with those people and build a true democratic country.
Our founding fathers, in their wisdom, realized the importance of the separation of religion and the state.
And the state, but also they did tip their hat, and most of them were very religious in
yes,
their own lives.
Well, I know you brought something with you, Congressman, and we'd like to, if you'd like to make that presentation now, we're very honored to have this.
What we've got here is, for you and for Straight Talk and for the crew, a flag so that, this is a nice flag, but this one will be a little bit more symbolic because this one was actually flown over the Capitol of the United States specifically to commemorate what you're doing and what your crew is doing here. In the communication of the ideals of our country, and as you say, you begin each program with a salute to those people who are protecting us, and this flag that's flown over our Capitol will be symbolic of that as well.
Well, thank you so much, Congressman. I'm honored to accept this on behalf of all of our crew, and in the next show, this flag, which is flown over the United States Capitol, will replace this wonderful flag, and I'm very honored to receive this from you. Thank you so much.
Right.
We'll be back with more of the Congressman after these messages. We're back continuing our conversation with Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, representing the 46th Congressional District. Let me just share with you the beautiful certificate which came with the flag that the Congressman was nice enough to present to us and the crew. And this flag was flown over the Capitol of the United States on January 17th, 2005, at the request of our guest, Dana Rohrabacher. So thank you again for that. Among the President's many proposals are reform of Social Security, and there's a debate going on whether Social Security is really in crisis or whether this is being hyped a bit to get some reforms that he changes that he wanted for other reasons. What's your take on that?
Well, it's not in crisis now, but you do nothing, and it will be in crisis by the time that my kids are ready for Social Security. Actually, long before my kids are ready for Social Security. My babies are, I have three little
triplets,
kids.
Triplets, 9 months.
9 months old. And we just want to make sure that there is a system available to them. And now is the time to make those changes, not waiting for the crisis to happen.
I haven't had a chance to really study it yet, so I haven't come down on an opinion. But I didn't realize that under the current system, you can work all your career, put in money for 35, 40 years, and now you start to draw retirement benefits. And if you die a year after you retire, your spouse gets nothing. It's over.
Zippo, right.
You put in for all those years and you get nothing. That doesn't seem fair.
Well, this would take care of that. And also, people keep talking about lockbox. you know, the social, there's more money being going into, right now, we pay much more money.
Shades of Al Gore.
Okay. More money than Social Security uses. And everybody says, oh, we're going to have a lockbox so that that money is safe for Social Security. Well, that's all baloney, of course. There's no lockbox. All the extra money that comes in from Social Security goes directly into the federal general fund and the federal budget and is used for all the bureaucracy. This plan, ironically, would see that the money that is left over, that the extra money, goes into a lockbox, and that each individual American can watch it and see it grow and know that it won't be used for anything except his or her retirement.
Well, the president has this concept of an ownership society, and like the old saying goes, no one ever washes a rented car. You do take more responsibility for something that you own.
Well, in the United States, if our economy had available to it for investment, these funds that now, as I say, just go into the general fund or to use for the bureaucracy, you would see a growth and an ownership, a growth that was sponsored by the ownership of the American people themselves. So the growth would be reflected in the value and the assets of every American citizen. And it wouldn't just be a growth where just the capitalist or the ownership class was participating. So young people understand this. And the president is very smart politically. He has allied himself with all the people under 35, and he's taking care of all the people over 55, saying, don't worry, we're never going to touch any of your benefits. It's only sort of the middle spoiled baby boomers that are going to be worried about it.
He also mentioned in his speech, Dana, the importance of faith-based initiatives for addressing such critical problems as gangs and others. Speak to that.
You know, I'm sort of back and forth on this whole thing because I don't want to see the federal government going in and giving money to certain religious groups because then how can you be fair to all religious groups?
Sure.
And some religious groups you don't want to give money to, and because maybe what they're preaching is not what you think is consistent with what you believe. So I've been back and forth on this, but I understand that the president's sincerity in this. He himself had went through very personal problems with alcohol and drugs when he was younger, and it was his religious faith, not just some, you know, helping hand, but a helping hand with a spiritual basis to it that helped get him out of his problems. And I personally believe that we're never going to solve the problems of our society without a spiritual side of it. But then having the government get involved, you end up...
So you sound like you just let these spiritual and faith-based groups do their thing without government assistance where you come down.
I would prefer giving people tax breaks, greater tax breaks, to donate to those religious organizations rather than having the government collect the taxes and then divvy out money the way the government thinks it should go.
Let me just pause for a second to recognize an article that was written about us making a difference. This was in a recent issue of the Press Telegram in Shirley Wild's column, and we thank so much Shirley and the paper for doing this. But it focuses on what we try and do on this show is make a difference, and the belief that everybody can make a difference in some way. You don't have to be a United States congressman. You don't have to be a TV show host to make a difference in your own community.
Well, in fact, that's the significant factor here is that we won't be able to change things unless all Americans are involved. That's what a democracy is. You know, United States, as I said, I think the last time I was on your show, United States, U.S., it's us. It's all, and in other societies where they try to leave things up to the government, things go haywire.
And we know from speaking to the police chief that the police cannot alone solve crime. They need the community. We speak to people in the arts. The arts need the community to support education. They have to have the parent involvement. It's absolutely clear that our institutions, no matter how good they are, cannot, like the song from Chicago, I can't do it alone.
As well, especially when you're talking about things like the police, where we have... if you just rely on the police and are not personally involved, you see someone who needs some help and you walk by, said the police will help, or you walk by somebody who is in need and, oh, well, the government's going to help this person, our society would fall apart. our greatest thing, one of the greatest aspects of American culture is that we are activists not only politically, but activists on in our churches and activists on a personal level with others to help them.
And when Alex de Tocqueville came over and observed that, the great volunteerism in this country, he was so impressed.
Well, we'd go broke without that. We would have been broke a long time ago, because when the government tries to do something, it usually costs about 10 times as much as when a private person's trying to help out.
Well, there's our quintessential Dana Rohrabacher, and we've come to the end. It goes so fast when you hear continued success in your fatherhood with your triplets and your wife, and you're a bi-coastal now, running back and forth to family in Washington.
Well, it's when I get home, when you're talking about helping out, my wife's got a big family, and we know how the importance of family now, grannies and
you
cousins
bet.
And everybody helping out. So
you bet.
I'm very grateful I've got some.
Thanks so much for joining us again, Congressman.
Right.
Thank you for being with us, and join us next week for the next edition of Straight Talk. Good night, everyone.
Straight Talk has been brought to you by Southern California Edison and other fine sponsors. Support the quality sponsors who support Straight Talk.